All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Sam, you ever say to a veteran, thank you for your service?
Definitely. I could not imagine doing what any of them have done.
So I'm sure many people who say thank you for your service don't really realize that many veterans don't want to hear that.
Oh, now I feel rude.
Yeah, because of the way they've been treated by our government. And here's a little story that I, you know, was came upon that I think really should open the eyes of many who say thank you for your service. I work with dying veterans. Here's why I don't automatically thank them for their service. Now, this person wanted to let people know what it's like having people thanking you for your service everywhere you go. This is the man, the serviceman. His name is James. You might think this is an exaggeration, but you asked, he said. It's an act of violence, which is the way this gentleman, this veteran, sees that. James shifts nervously from one foot to the other, sweat glistening on his forehead and his muscles tense. A smiling intern approaches with a flag pen intent on thanking him for his military service, whether he likes it or not. That's when he bolts for the door. I take off after him. There's no way I'm letting him tear into the highway with his nervous system flashing red. Visions of high-speed collision flash in my mind as I jog through the parking lot trying to catch him. Earlier that morning, I noticed James standing apart from the milling crowd gathered for a workshop on terminally ill veterans who have combat related psychological challenges like post-traumatic stress disorder, moral injury, and complicated bereavement. With his straight back and haircut in the style of a Marine, James was a stark contrast to the business card exchanging group of social workers and psychologists with whom I've been chatting. One of the reasons why, you know, many of these men who have come back from the theater of war, you know, don't think it's a great thing to say thank you for your service is because of we have no concept of what these people have been exposed to. Their lives have been forever changed for the worse. And so... no platitude can ever get them back to where they were before they went into hell's door. You know, I couldn't imagine, you know, going into a place that prepared me and taught me to kill. And that's what my job is. They turned me into a killing machine, not a human being. That's what war is. You know, war is a hellified condition and reality that nobody should have to deal with. And when you take someone 18 years old and train them to be the best killer on the face of the earth, And at some point in time, those people who have been positioned in those theaters of war, they want to forget that. And thank you for your service to them is, you know, we don't know it. The people who clearly are saying thank them for their service are doing it from a position of respect, they think. But they have no concept at all that what that matters and what that means to people who've been in the theater of war. I've got a lot of veteran friends, especially from the Vietnam era war, and wounded veterans and others who just do not want to hear that their lives have been forever changed. And they know that war is that theater of hell where you will, your life will be forever changed, and not forever the better, but for the worse.
And then you, the way you say that, it's just like, how are we expecting them to regularly integrate back into society after that and not help them? Like you said, like, I just from you explaining that, I feel the frustration of, you know, you go through all of this mental anguish and training to be a killer, and then you're just like, oh, well, yeah, it's done now, so just go back into society.
Well, and that's exactly what many veterans, especially Vietnam era veterans and even Iraqi veterans and others, they've also been exposed to all sorts of chemicals that have really ruined their lives, their reproductive systems, and long term, what they've been exposed to is going to impact them later on in their lives. And thank you for your service is, you know, again, people don't say it with any malicious intent. They just don't understand what these men and women have been exposed to. And that's why it should, you know, if you're going to go to war, you should be careful about where you're sending these young men and women whose lives are going to be impacted forever. And let me read a little bit later. I've heard that from many, from lots of veterans. I'd say nodding. Let me go here. Politicians, military brass, the majority of people in this country who don't give a bleep what really happened to me and my buddies and who don't want to hear about it. He stared in my eyes as though expecting me to be uncomfortable with his candor. I've heard that from lots of veterans, I'd say nodding, not just the ones who fought in Iraq going way back. That's the dirty little secret about war, he said, extending his hand. It's always an act of betrayal. Later, we grabbed seats together at a table with three others. The trainer started with moral injury. What it is, what it looks like, why it matters. He played poignant excerpts from recorded interviews of veterans talking about the psychologically and spiritually painful impact of witnessing or committing actions that violated their sense of morality or that had shattered their trust in those they relied on to act in their best interests. You know, we have no concept at all of what that is that those men and women have been engaged in. Who do we have on the line, Sam?
Ron from Milwaukee's calling in.
Hey, Ron, how you doing, man? Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you for your show, Earl. Another good one.
Thank you.
I just want to point out my dad, bless his soul, was a World War II veteran, fought in the Pacific Theater. And as with most men from who and women who fought in World War II, he was very quiet about it. He didn't tell the family about it. And it took me a long time to figure that out. I mean, he eventually told me some things late in his life. And I could see right then why he didn't want to talk about what he had seen. He was in combat. And, but they were, it wasn't just that they were self-effacing, you know, I'm just doing my job, you know, I'm serving my country. It was because of, as you have talked about here, it was because of what he had seen. And he didn't want to imprint that on us. He didn't want us to feel all that horror and pain. And you know, he was a great dad, but he was messed up in some way.
Well, yeah. Hey, Ron, I want you to hang on because I want to delve a little deeper with you. And, you know, our fathers, the men we look up to, the men we love, you know, my dad was in the Korean War. And you know they were asked to do some horrific things at a very young age, 18, 19 years old. And like you said, they carried that shame with them the rest of their lives. It's so easy for us to say thank you for your service when they've been wrestling that torment that they had to keep stuffed for their entire lives, you know, 60, 70 years. And, you know, it certainly destroys the spirit of a human being, of a person. And so I'm sure they've questioned their entire lives of what they did. And they had no choice but to do it once you joined the military. If I can say something about that,
there are two components, other components to this, which I think you've touched on a little bit. One is the traumatic after effects, PTSD, and not something that was accepted or well understood back then, but it certainly is now, and people still have trouble getting treated for it.
Right.
And you know, aside from the chemical, you know, assaults and physical assaults on these poor men and their bodies. But the other thing is...
Hey Ron, do me a favor, man. We got a short break. Hang on. We'll come back to you. I want to hear what you have to say. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. Who to talk to? To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. Hey, Ron, thank you for holding on, man. I really wanted to hear what you were saying.
No problem. I was going to say that I mentioned PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Right.
And in that respect, and in the other respects that plague these veterans, like not getting enough health care through the Veterans Administration.
Right.
And I know there are great people at the Vets Administration, but they don't have the budget they need.
That's correct.
All of these things are a microcosm of what's wrong with our society in general, because there are people living, civilians living in this country all over the place, not just in big cities, but in small towns like the one I grew up in. And they're clearly suffering from PTSD because somebody close to them has been killed in a horrible way, like a shooting,
yes,
or a road rage incident.
Yes.
And that's exactly the same kind of psychological damage that these soldiers had. It might not be as severe or as horrible for everybody, but it affects the whole society. These veterans that don't get the care they need and the attention they need. And one more thing, and then I'll shut up, is that not only do veterans not want to hear thank you for your service, that is like these politicians, mostly Republicans, in state and national, who, when there's react to a massacre, gun massacre, a civilian gun massacre, which is a daily occurrence in this country now, and they say, "Our hearts and prayers are with go out to you." It's like the survivors and relatives and close members of that family and the community don't want to hear your thoughts and prayers We want to hear what you're going to do to solve those problems.
Ron, man, I don't know if you're a therapist or what, but man, you're right. You're right on point. And you know, people have to understand that when people's lives have been totally changed forever, you can't ever fix it with "thank you for your service." The way you can fix it is to value what they've done and make sure that they are taken care of. You know, these things were done in the name of our government. And so if those men and women who put their lives on the line for our government, and then our government turns around and the best we can do is thank you for your service, hey, you know, all I'm doing with this article is trying to bring attention from a guy who represents many other veterans that I've talked to who really don't want to hear that. You know, they want to hear, like you said, I'm going to get the right kind of treatment that I need from the burn pits that we were exposed to in Iraq, you know, where the bombs were dropped and the oil wells and the smoke and the soot that is causing just untold mayhem to the veterans of the Iraqi war. The Vietnam veterans who were exposed to Agent Orange and all of those things, and a government that did not do anything to support them when they kept telling them when they came back that they were dealing with these issues. Our government finally, when those men got to be 50 and 60 years old and close to being dying from their maladies, finally agreed and started giving them compensation when they had, you know, only a few years left in their life. Don't thank them for their service. Give them what they deserve. You know,
it's like most things in this country. It's like most things in this country, Earl, that some politicians and some people, some citizens, don't. They know the value of nothing, but they know the price of everything. And so if you say to them, well, we need to spend another $100 billion this year on veterans care, or we need to spend another $100 billion on improving our infrastructure and creating healthier communities in our cities and for people, middle-class people and poor people alike, they're going to say, well, where are you going to get the money? And it's like, well, I don't know, but you're spending $800 billion a year
on the military.
Defense.
Yes.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not saying defund the military. I'm saying try to get into fewer wars. You know, I mean, try to go at – I mean, it isn't sexy to go out and hire a bunch of social workers to try to alleviate these police shootings that don't need to happen because they're confrontational and the citizens – are scared and don't respect the police. They're afraid the police are going to hurt them. Send social workers instead. Well, let's hire some social workers. That's not defunding anybody. But then even if it isn't defunding anybody, you got to pay for them. And then they're going to say, well, where's the extra money coming from? Well, we're going to have to cut another program. Well, no, we're not going to have to cut another program. That's your attitude. Your attitude is what's killing us. Can I just one more thing?
Yes, sir.
There's some wonderful things happening beneficial to veterans and to citizens too, to civilians too, in here in Milwaukee and in Wisconsin and the nation. And an example are tiny homes that are being built
yes.
for veterans who can't afford, literally cannot
yes.
afford, you know, rent, regular rent. I mean, middle class people can't afford regular rent, but especially some of these veterans who are broken people and trying, you know, a lot of them are homeless.
So hey Ron, give them quickly, tiny homes. Quickly, can you explain to me how we send those people halfway around the world or all the way around the world to fight and die, and those who come back, shouldn't at least we do is guarantee them a home? We're not talking about a palace, a palatial palace, but shouldn't that be part of this? Because so many vets still sleep under bridges and eat out of garbage cans. Don't say thank you for your service. Let's show some action. to prove to them that we care about their service. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I certainly do. And, you know, the other thing to bear in mind is that because of the way this our society is structured, it isn't rich people who go to fight wars. It's poor people. And sometimes middle-class people. And we don't have a draft. So, and by and large, it's people that young people, mostly men, who are coming out of school. They don't see anything else to do. I have friends like this, and they enlisted. Yeah. And maybe they went over and fought a war, or maybe they didn't. But they didn't get anything for it. You know, I mean, they essentially did not get anything for it. And there's, you know, it's not just the housing component. I mean, the housing component is really important. But, I mean, I'd say in this country, we need a guaranteed income. Even Richard Nixon thought that was a good idea.
Well, you know what, Ron, man, thank you. You've been a great caller. You really have. Call more. Really enjoyed your conversation, all right? We've got to go to a break. But thank you very much. I really appreciate you hanging on and all of that. Got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Be right back. You can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Here's another great story. As I was moving around, I couldn't help but get excited about this story. Sarah Palin is open to running as a running mate for Donald Trump in 2024. Let's see if I got this right. So, Sarah Palin and Donald Trump for president and vice president of the United States. Any takers out there? Is there anybody who thinks somehow that would be the winning ticket? Donald Trump and Sarah Palin. You know, Sarah Palin disappeared for a number of years because her life was in total upheaval. You know, she got divorced. Her son was arrested and jailed and drug addicted and had to deal with a lot of different issues. Her daughter, who said she was celibate all along the way when she people found out that she had not only one, but now three children. And yet Sarah Palin was touting and her daughter herself was talking about celibacy. She wound up with three children and she was out, you know, all over the nation. They were following the Palins and all of this information was out there. And just the fact that Sarah Palin is not the, you know, the brightest of people. They talk a lot about Kamala Harris and whether you think she's the brightest person or not. She has a law degree. And the last time I checked, they don't give those away. But Sarah Palin and Donald Trump together could possibly be the worst presidential nominee and vice presidential nominee ever in the history of this country. You know, I get to a point. You get to a point where you just don't think that anything could be as bad as you know, some of the things that are happening right now. But that's got to be. It's going to be one of the funniest. What do you call the nighttime people who do the shows
and Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, those kind of things.
Oh, that'll be a good one for
Yeah, those and the nighttime comedic shows that I used to watch a long time ago. But look, they'd have nothing but a lot of fun with Donald Trump and Sarah Palin.
Got to bring back Tina Fey for sure.
Yeah, you know, oh yeah, that's right, Tina Fey.
Kills the Sarah Palin impression.
Yeah, she really did. You know, I want to talk now a little bit about where is it at? I know I have it here somewhere. Let's see if I can find it. But while I'm thinking about that, you know, I've been talking about the COVID and where it is. Were you ever able to figure out, Sam, why there was so much anger by people from wearing masks? I mean, parents didn't want their kids to wear masks. The schools created so much hatred and all of those things about masks. And I never really understood, but I talked the other day about where we are and things are really starting to get out of whack again. And I don't know, man. There's still this push and this anger and angst by people on the right about people wearing masks. And, you know, I didn't like wearing masks, but I certainly, you know, wore them. But I didn't get angry. The young man that we're raising, he wore masks in school. You know, I didn't think anybody got murdered from wearing masks. But if you are somebody out there who hates and thinks that it's the worst decision ever made in the history of mankind for people to have to wear masks, 844-967-2789 is the number. 844-967-2789 is the number. Call me and let me know why you think that's such one of the worst things ever. But again, I told you I listened to conservative talk. And they're still beating that drum. And they'll beat that drum all the way up until the midterm elections. And the fact that there are people who buy into that and continue with that is beyond me. Hey, did you know Bernie Sanders is thinking about running for president again?
Third time's the charm, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully.
I'm wondering, normally that doesn't happen. If you know, Joe Biden is a Democrat and he's the president of the United States, and there's generally not a challenge from somebody within that same party. It's kind of like, well, you know, we don't do that. Biden is our president. We don't want to, you know, him to have to run in the primary. And I don't recall that happening with Republicans either. But in this instance, what would you think of that, Sam?
I mean, obviously, as a younger person, I've found Bernie's ideas very appealing, and I do enjoy him quite a bit. But the biggest red flag for me would be the age thing again.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily want someone that old to be in there.
Well, he's 82. And even though he wears it well, we're still talking to you. Who do we have on the line?
L.A. Tom's calling in.
Hey, L.A. Tom, what's going on, man? What's going on?
Hey, Earl, I didn't mean to call back again.
Now listen, Tom, it's fine, man. It's fine.
All right. Bernie did say that if Joe Biden is running, that he will not run.
Okay.
I just want to correct the record on it.
Yeah, okay. Let me ask you, man. If President Joe Biden doesn't run, well, you know, what do you think the chances are? The only way that Joe Biden won't run is if he's ill or sick,
right?
You know,
exactly.
He clearly is going to run, but you know, that's 2.5 years from now, man. Anything can happen.
100%. You know, I mean, I've always been a Bernie fan, but you know, I'm. I'm an FDR supporter, so I need Bernie to be hugging FDR a little bit more and saying the policies that FDR talked about.
Hey, Tom.
Hunter back on track.
Tom, you've heard some of the subjects we've been talking about today. And many of those subjects are, again, why do we as a society refuse to challenge the government when it's wrong? You know, you say we the people out of government. You say it all the time. It is a truism. But if we the people don't act upon it, then we continue to deal with what we're dealing with now. You know,
100%. But we got no one to blame but ourselves. I mean, we have to. If we had everyone showing up at the White House and really, you know, doing a effort where, you know, 20% of this country showed up and banged on doors. I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, just 200,000 like did in Wisconsin, but actually had that type of people to get money out of politics as an example. Money would be out of politics.
Well, but you know, Tom, it's gotten to be a pipe dream to somehow think that money's going to be out of politics.
Citizens United didn't help.
I got that, but the cat's out of the horse's out of the barn, and unless you know we are able to, and we shouldn't have to do this. If you are an adult and with a modicum of understanding, you should know that there's no way that it makes sense that you know money should trump, no pun intended, should trump the citizens' votes.
I agree.
Yeah, but it is that's what we're dealing with, and so, we continue to face this battle. And I always say this, man. You know, it's incumbent upon my generation and your generation to fix it, because it changed in our generation.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I totally agree. I mean, that's definitely what needs to be done. But yeah, I still believe that, you know, we the people are the government, and we are the ones that have to change it.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call, as always, my friend. I really appreciate it. You know, when I look for things to discuss, you know, I've got Sandy on tomorrow, and so it's going to be a different show. You know, when I'm on the air with Sandy, I think it's so important what Sandy brings to the table as it relates to what is happening with us globally, especially when it comes to what this nation has done in the past and why it's so critically important that we listen to. Here's the one thing that I remember the first time I met Sandy, or the first real elongated conversation I had with Sandy. And we were talking about the fact that we have a government that doesn't plan, long-term planning. And you just have to ask the question, why a nation like ours that sees all these issues, supposedly we're some of the smartest people on earth, why we won't organize and plan for the future of our society? I don't know why that doesn't happen. 844-967-2789. Do you? We'll be right back. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
Can't put it in the hands of fate.
Walker
Waukesha. Tune in every weekday from 11 to 2 for the Tom Hartman Program. Join the show's conversation because our democracy is not a spectator sport. Listen live Monday through Friday right here on the Shaw, Waukesha's home for progressive news talk radio.
All right. Welcome back to the Early Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Staying on democracy. Tax day. Study shows U.S. billionaires now own $4.7 trillion in this nation. An analysis released Monday to make tax day in the United States, to mark tax day in the United States, shows that the country's 735 billionaires have seen their collective wealth soar by 62% over the past 2 years, while workers' earnings have grown just 10%. Modest gains eaten away by the rising costs of food, housing, and other necessities. Let me repeat that. 62%, 735 billionaires' collective wealth has soared 62% in the last 2 years. While we are hearing that the average Joe's, you and I, earnings have only grown 10%, and that's really being taken away by the cost of food and housing and other things. According to new calculations by Oxfam, U.S. billionaires now own a combined $4.7 trillion in wealth, much of which goes completely untaxed, as ProPublica recently found in an examination of data from the Internal Revenue Service, an agency that disproportionately targets the poor. The 25 richest people in the U.S. paid a true tax rate of just 3.4% from 2014 to 2018. The billionaires' wealth explosion in the country comes at a time of historic inflation hitting working families, compounded by the expiration of critical social safety nets put in place at the start of the pandemic to protect America's most vulnerable, said Gina Cummins, vice president of Advocacy Alliances and Policy at Oxfam America. The impact on real people is devastating, leading countless families to slip into poverty, Cummings added. The ongoing failure of our nation's leaders to implement a more equitable tax system is a stain on democracy. Now, you know, 735 billionaires, 62% increase over their wealth in the last 2 years. And there are people who think this is all right. Well, that's capitalism. That's how it works. And I'm for capitalism. Well, I'm pretty sure that people who are saying that aren't one of the 735 billionaires. They're probably like you and I, Sam, who struggle every day to try to make it. And yet I've never been able to understand why we support, you know, capitalism in that manner. You know, when the capitalism that you and I are part of does not benefit you and I in the long run like it benefits those who don't pay their fair share. Oxfam's new analysis estimates that the series of tax proposals that have been introduced in Congress but have yet to pass would bring in $252 billion in additional federal revenue each year. The version of President Joe Biden's Build Back Better agenda that the House passed in November would cost just $175 billion per year over the next decade. You know, how are we as a society going to be able to pull ourselves out of what many of us know is not a fair and equitable reality in our nation? We know it's not right. Elected officials know it's not right. The people who we elect in a representative government to look out for our best interests won't do that because we don't bring the pressure necessary. And I think in many instances it's because we don't know. You know, we don't know what that looks like, $4.7 trillion. And the fact that, you know, 753 people have access to that much cash in a society. You know, is it that we're jealous of people who have been able to position themselves, rightly or wrongly, in a position where they have that kind of cash? You know, you look at, you know, Jeff Bezos and others, and I keep forgetting the guy's name who owns Tesla.
Elon Musk.
And we celebrate them, and, you know, and we talk about, see how great our nation is. That's the kind of nation we live in, because look at what they were able to do. You know, some of them, a couple of them are self-made, and, you know, all of us have the same opportunity. No, we don't. Stop saying all of us have the opportunity to do what they have done. You know, this nation is only in a position to allow so many billionaires. And those of us everyday people are not going to be able to get into a position, you know, where that happens. And I'm not begrudging people who have a lot of money. You know, you have a lot of money, fine. Whatever amount of money you have, you're going to die too. You know, and I don't care. You know, people talk about, well, you know, man, they're living so well. Hey, money's not going to extend their life 1 millisecond longer than anyone else's when it's time for them to leave this planet. So while they're on the earth and they got all that money and all that power and leeway, you know, people want to try to become that. I've never been one who thought that he who has the most toys in the end has lived the best life. You know, if you live your life based upon the principle that he who has the most money is the greatest of us, then I feel sorry for you, because there's so many aspects of the life that you miss out on. You know, right now, you know, if I had, you know, that kind of wealth, you know, I'm at this point in my life, I'm not waking up every day trying to make a buck. You know, I've got a lot more years behind me than I do ahead of me. I'm aware of that. And so money is not my God. Never has it been, and never will it be. So you can stack all the money up you want to stack up, and it's not going to give you any more contentment. And I'll tell you something. I know people who have a lot of money. They're not happy. We seem to think that people who have all the money in the world, they're happy. They're not happy, because they believe that everybody's trying to get their money. Right? You know? And so, you know, that's a burden. Can be a burden sometimes. But anyway, we got to get out of here. Sam's going to be 66 degrees later on this afternoon.
What a time to be alive.
Yeah, and I'm going to be out and amongst it. Thank everybody who made the show go. I'll be back on tomorrow. Thank you, Sam. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Enjoy the weather. Don't be foolish and stay inside. Get out and enjoy it. See you later.